Hey there. Ever wonder what happens to all those amazing screenplays that never make it to the big screen? Wonder no more. Welcome to Table Read Podcast, where we bring those undiscovered gems to life. Picture this: talented actors giving incredible performances with the occasional laugh or blooper thrown in, produced by award-winning pros. From drama to comedy, TV pilots to feature films, there's something for everyone. And guess what? We release new episodes every week, so don't forget to hit that subscribe button. Table Read Podcast, where great stories finally get their chance to shine.
Hey, everybody, welcome to the Dungeon Cast. I'm Brian.
And I'm Will.
This is the podcast where we talk about everything Dungeons and Dragons. And this week, we're talking about Crystal Dragons.
Welcome, adventurers, to the Dungeon Cast.
Hey, Brian.
Hey, Will.
How you doing today?
I'm doing great.
That's
swell.
Good.
Fantastic.
Fabulous.
How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm doing all right.
Yeah. Great, man. Last time I said I was ready to talk about fucking dragons. And a lot of people thought.
I was very surprised at these comments out
here. Something sexual.
They did. They really did. I didn't. When you said it, I took you for your meaning.
I'm here to debunk the myths. I do want to fuck a dragon.
Oh, no. Welcome to the Dungeon Cast,
folks.
Welcome
to Brian demonetizing the podcast on YouTube by dropping F-bombs in the first minute.
So, Brian, This is it. The final gem dragon.
My final chance to...
To what? Oh, no.
Well...
there's no more after this. Absolutely no more gem dragon content whatsoever.
Not at all?
No, that's not entirely true. Perhaps Obsidian Dragons or the Ruby Dragon Sardior will get their own episode soon enough.
Ask about Sardior.
Yeah, we might do one. And if we do, maybe this year. We'll see.
Okay.
I can't make any promises.
Okay, well.
I really want to do this, I do promise, because I really want to do another dungeon building episode, and I can think of no better candidate for building a lair than one of the five gem dragons. So we'll do some random table dice. We'll randomly roll one of the five gem dragons, and we'll build a lair.
That'll
be cool.
We had some fun with the beholder on that one. Hey, everybody, if you're watching, watch me slowly sink down lower and lower in my chair. I just discovered the other day that my chair is broken.
Oh, so, no.
Yes, it's new chair time. Please subscribe to our Patreon.
Please. Today we're talking about crystal dragons, known to be the friendliest of their kind, which is not hard since we've established the other four types of gem dragons essentially hate other people and social situations in general. Crystal dragons, on the other hand, actually enjoy conversing with other creatures, and as one would expect, they are named for their similarity to crystals.
Wow. And that's weird.
I know,
just
right?
Just kidding.
Any questions before we get into it?
How do I fix this chair?
Did it just break right now?
Look,
like live?
I'm taller than you.
And you are taller than me.
Slightly.
Yes. I would say by a good inch.
Yeah, sure. Depends on which girl you ask. I mean.
All right, let's get into crystal dragons as Brian slowly shrinks.
Okay.
When they hatch, crystal dragons have dull gray scales with a few white or clear crystalline points, allowing the wormlings to blend into rocky terrain in the face of danger. As they age, their scales turn snow white, then slowly fade to transparency. The oldest crystal dragons have scales of perfect clarity that bend and refract light, sometimes making them difficult to see clearly. Under the light of the moon or stars, they luminesce and sparkle. In bright sunlit light, they have a dazzling brilliance to them.
Ooh.
The radiant energy of the positive plane shimmers in crystal dragon scales. It glows like starlight between their bodies and the spines and horns that hover close to their heads and backs. These horns shift with the dragon's mood, bristling with anger, lying back with fear or suspicion, rippling in side-to-side waves with amusement or joy.
The visual on these reminds me of... you know where they would keep the gachapon machines at like diners or grocery stores up front?
Yeah.
And
like the little toys, right?
Yeah, and they'd have like little sticker vending machines right next to it.
Yeah.
They'd be like Pokemon stickers that are like,
oh my god,
overly holographic.
Dude, you're taking me back to like my 8 to 10 year old life.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I would always want those stickers, and my parents would never let me get them.
Do you remember those 50-cent stickers? And the vending machines next to the gachapons from the 1990s.
I do.
They had like visibly drawn like holographic triangles all over them. Yeah,
they did.
Yeah, it sounds like that.
They were super cool. Okay, moving on. As hatchlings, they average a 1 foot in length body and a 1 foot in length tail, I don't know if you want to.
That's 0.3 meters, everyone.
Indeed. While an adult averages a body length of 28 to 38 feet.
Or 8.5 to 12 meters.
And a tail length of 30 to 40 feet.
Which is 9.1 to 12 meters.
The biggest great worms grow to 92 feet.
Or 28 meters.
Long in the body, with tails 91 feet.
28 meters.
Long.
This is good. This is good.
Yeah, setup. No, absolutely. Shimmering the shimmering with radiant energy and brimming with life, crystal dragons enjoy an innate sonic connection to the positive plane, or positive planes, really, that suffuse their bodies as well as their personalities with light. By all accounts, they are among the friendliest dragon kind, nurturing and optimistic.
They just don't want to talk to anybody, though.
They are as friendly as they are, there is a very slight aloofness to them, but they're still mostly very chatty.
They smile at you at the grocery store, but they avoid the
shit
out of you.
They just keep going. Yeah.
They see you come into the bread aisle. They leave the bread aisle.
I mean, I would say crystal dragons are still pretty social. You'll see. Though they are the most amicable of the gem dragons, crystal dragons still rarely go looking for companionship. they eagerly welcome visitors to converse with them when they appear, especially if they are interesting or appear friendly and not as if they're trying to rob them. They are dragons with hordes and they protect those.
So they do want to talk about bread.
Yeah, but they don't go looking for bread conversation.
They'll talk to you if you're like, oh man, what's up with the special on the wheat? Is it cool to buy?
Exactly.
I'll be like, yeah, it's good. It smells great.
Otherwise, they, like other gem dragons, try to avoid meeting others. It's oddly paradoxical, but I don't know. I kind of get it because I very much am like this in real life.
Yeah.
Like, you know me very well.
Uh-huh.
When I'm in a setting where I'm around friends, I'm very chatty, but I never go looking for conversation. I very much avoid it in the real life. I'm quite introverted.
Yeah. Me and Will like having friends, and we love all of you.
Indeed we do.
We don't have to talk to most of you. But we do. If you talk to us, if you email us at thedungeoncast@gmail.com,
we will talk to you. We welcome the conversation. We just don't go looking for it.
I didn't make it to the P.O. box because I had time today and not yesterday. So before, in a month from now, we will have opened up the P.O. box and we'll be talking about it.
Okay, for sure.
We record episodes in batches of three.
We do. So it's more like 3 weeks from now. But yeah.
Yeah.
Crystal dragons are non-aggressive by nature and rarely start a fight without a good reason. They would much rather talk things out. In fact, they even have a common, rather bad habit of using charm person near the start of almost any conversation to avoid the risk of battle later. Yeah, that's pretty manipulative.
You're walking the line, abusive. I was going to say.
Yeah, that's not cool. Not cool, Crystal Dragon.
Not really that cool. That's how much they want to just have a chill conversation with somebody. It's like, please don't fight me for my horde. Please don't fight me for my horde. No, just fuck it. Charm person. I can't do this.
I can't handle the anxiety. As I said before, their connection to the radiant forces of the positive plane fosters a nurturing, optimistic attitude in most of these dragons. This has a strong enough influence in crystal dragons that they sometimes even go as far as to adopt the abandoned eggs or hatchlings of other dragons. That's how nurturing they are. Okay. Many a white wormling has been raised in the caring environment of a crystal dragon's lair.
Everything's checking out except for that charm person thing, pretty much.
Yeah, but this white wormling thing gets a little weird. You'll see.
Uh-oh.
Crystal dragons have an endless curiosity about the world in general, but a favorite pastime of theirs is to emerge at night, lie on the ground, and watch the stars. Many crystal dragons make a study of the stars, recording their observations of the night sky and tracking the signs written in starlight. They read these signs as omens, giving them glimpses of what is to come, and they eagerly examine the potential futures of any creatures who come to them in peace. So they definitely want to know your sign, they want to read your palm, and they want to read your future.
I in the fantasy world, that's all cool with me. Yeah. But I do not like doing that in real life.
No, you
in
don't
real
like
life.
To get your stars charted or
no.
Whatever they call it.
Like when we get into astrology conversations, I respect your decision to believe in it
sure,
and all that.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
fine, but please stop imposing it on me, please.
Yeah, yeah. No, please, of course. Absolutely.
I was going to be like, yeah, me too. Me, I am Crystal Dragon also, but not anymore. Not with that part.
A Crystal Dragon's first question is like, what's your sign?
Yeah.
Definitely.
See,
definitely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But they're not going to ask you. They're going to wait for you to ask them.
Yeah, there. That's true. That's true. They also love having fun and making mischief, often in the snow. Crystal dragons will hurl snowballs at unsuspecting targets.
What the fuck?
Fashion splendid sculptures from snow and ice and construct snow forts and even amazing palaces on top of mountains.
These guys are so interesting.
They're
what
very
the
chill.
Is that?
They're very chill. I love it.
Especially when they're in the snow.
Yeah. So you can't get chiller than that. Crystal dragons seek out frigid, picturesque locations with clear views of the sky above to build their lairs.
Crystal clear locations, mm-hmm. maybe.
Thus, their lairs are most often found in polar expanses, dizzying mountain peaks, and glacial flows. Some resemble icy palaces with numerous balconies offering plentiful opportunities for sky gazing. Though ice and snow are the most common materials they use in construction of a lair, crystal and other precious minerals feature prominently in certain areas. In this way, crystal dragons' hordes literally become the fabric of their home.
What? Okay, cool.
Yeah, so they literally implement crystal and gold and gems into the construction of their palace-like lairs.
I kind of... Have I imagined a dragon horde like that? I always imagined them, like, very smooth carving, like... domes kind of shapes in like
oh cave. For like for yeah I mean that's I think that's common and that picture, would be very common
maybe like ledges and stuff like where like tiers of where they put like certain wealth you know like it'd yeah. be cool if I just like kind of haphazardly threw a chest with like a ton of gold coins spilling out up here on this ledge you know like that sort of stuff
yeah like where Pirates it's like of the on Caribbean. Display yeah I mean I could see a bronze dragon maybe doing that for sure but some dragons we've talked about literally like yeah, on the outside, it may look like a craggy cave. When you go inside, oh, it's just a mansion in here.
Yeah, I have also pictured, like, it's a museum that you walk through, and it's, like, got, like, rectangular hallways and things like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it just depends. It really depends on the dragon. This one likes to build ice palaces with stuff embedded into the walls.
That's fucking cool. Don't they do that thing out in the... There's some Antarctic tundra place where they, like, build a bar and a hotel out of... It's, like, a five-star hotel they build out of ice. Have you heard of that?
I haven't, but I've gone to like, I don't know what they're called. They're like below zero bars or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
Where the walls are ice and like, it's kind of like that. Your drink glass will be made of ice.
Yeah, so the hotel, pretty much it's like all that stuff. There's just a bunch of dudes with chainsaws working all day and then you get to go party.
It's fucking cool.
Yeah.
It's pretty badass.
It's about as cool as it gets.
Absolutely.
and snow jokes.
Like Gem Cutters seeking to perfect a diamond, they spend much of their lives refining, polishing, and enhancing the beauty of their lairs.
So
their lair is their hoard. It's their treasure. It's their everything.
This is pretty sweet, although I think other dragons might shit on them for that.
You know, every dragon's got their style, and every dragon is always treading on other dragon styles.
Wow, your walls look great. Where's all your stuff?
Yeah, exactly.
Where's like all your like gold and stuff?
Dragons are so judgmental. one of the factors behind why crystal dragons who dwell on the material plane prefer to live atop cold, high mountains, usually on the very peaks and crags, is that they favor cold, open spaces with clear skies for their stargazing. Mm. In fact, a good number of crystal dragons decide to reside in the elemental plane of air, the most open sky place of all time.
Nice, so yeah.
It's nothing but sky.
It's mostly sky up there.
Yeah. It's all sky.
Some of the clouds are hard, I guess.
Yeah, I suppose so. For their treasure hoards, crystal dragons prize diamonds and baubles that refract light, and objects that remind them of the stars, sky, sun, or heavens, and relics that aid in the divinatory arts collections of prophecies. This, of course, includes countless works of astronomy and star charts. When it comes to magical treasure, they seek items and spells that predict the future, can create or manipulate light, or channel positive energy for healing and nurturing.
Okay, now I'm starting to see it. Their hoards could have like movable wall parts and stuff to like this crystal is actually a skylight that like opens up and refracts the light a certain way.
Oh yeah,
and stuff
definitely.
Like that.
That's super cool.
They're
I like that
using,
idea.
Using like
yeah.
these trinkets and gems they find to make like mosaics of a certain like it's just it's a big mural, it's a big picture, but it's just made of tiny little like specific gems or like gold pocket watches and
yeah, and then maybe the mural itself is actually like a chart that depicts, like, I don't know, the phases of the moon or the sun or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah, like we did the moon and the sun is made of gold pocket watches and the moon is made of crystals.
Yeah, there you go.
Neat. It's fun.
They prioritize beauty over value. So while they adore gemstones of all kinds, they prize fine quartz as highly as cut diamonds.
Yeah, it's way cheaper than marble for countertops.
Absolutely. Crystal dragons enhance the natural beauty of their lairs with the treasures they collect, always trying to display those items they consider most precious in a tasteful and interesting way and recounting their elaborate histories to visitors whenever possible. Indeed, crystal dragons also see amassing such wonderful hoards as a way to attract new friends to the remote locations that they inhabit.
They want want to talk to you so bad, but you know they don't want to be cringe.
Yeah,
and
they're homebodies, but they're social homebodies. But they just don't want to leave their house. So why don't you come over here?
They're very secretly leaving flyers for like an open house. Like, hey, come see my hoard if you want, I guess. But you didn't hear that from me. Yep. Actually, I don't know who made this flyer.
As one would imagine, crystal dragons frequently come into contact with the many Arctic monsters of Dungeons & Dragons, most of which are quite mean. Frost giants, Remorazes, white dragons, etc. Conflicts with crystal dragons and white dragons in particular are very common. Some white dragons tend to try and hunt down crystal dragons, and crystal dragons have a tendency to adopt young white dragons or even go as far as to steal their eggs.
Oh, shoot.
This is in an effort to raise them to be friendlier dragons, though if successful, such dragons are incredibly rare.
Wow. They got to fuck up the Remoraz every once in a while, huh?
Oh, yeah, all the time.
All the time.
I don't think a Remoraz can fuck with them very much. But
fucking Remoraz accidentally burrowed into my horde. Time to die.
That would be very annoying. Can you imagine a Remoraz infestation? I already hate, like, if I see a single cockroach anywhere near my house. But if a Remoraz got
know,
in,
you see
I'd
one
be
Remoraz,
mad.
You know, you better check under the fucking cabinets, my dude. You get pretty bad burn from those guys, right?
That's true, but
even if you're a crystal dragon, you might still like take some
fire damage. But they don't resist fire damage. I don't.
Good
but
thing
they're
in
goddamn
D&D land,
dragon.
You just get to go to sleep to like cure your third degree burn.
True that. Also, crystal dragons can fucking fly, so the Remoraz can't really get to them.
They can fucking fly, but can they fly and fuck?
I'm sure they can do both.
Yeah.
God damn it.
Dragons are horny.
That they are.
Hey, are gem dragons horny?
You know, it doesn't really talk much about the horniness level.
I know they make things horny, like in the local area.
A lot of the horniness lore is from like the old editions.
Yeah. Well, that's been embodied in the culture of the game.
Sure.
You cannot meme away from horny bards. If you're in the meme game, you see it.
Yeah, it's true. That being said, I think the gem dragons are the least horny of the three major dragon types.
Crystal dragons are so horny, but they can't ask anyone for any sort of anything. They have to wait for someone to show up and offer it to them.
Yeah, exactly. And despite their general friendliness, crystal dragons carry quite a strong animosity towards giants of all kinds. Frost giants being the ones that interact with the most. This animosity towards giant kind is due to their common attempts to enslave crystal dragons.
What?
So I don't know if you remember.
They do enslave white dragons, right?
Well, kind of. Frost dragons have a whole thing about dominating other creatures and keeping them as brutally abused pets. Mm-hmm. Mostly Remorazes.
Yeah.
But also anything they can get their hands on. So yes, a young white dragon would be prey to that. Where was I? And white dragons, being as cruel and evil as they tend to be, have been known to actually aid frost giants in discovering crystal giants' lairs to capture their young.
Oh,
so, yeah,
bummer.
Crystal dragons have some serious enemies in their domains.
I smelled some riches.
Yeah.
Across the sea.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, so, like, frost giants hate crystal giants because crystal giants are
Wait,
good.
Crystal giants?
Crystal dragons. Can you imagine crystal giants? They should act crystal giants in this game. That'd be really cool.
The giants and dragons fuse.
No, but crystal dragons and giants have a lot of animosity just because of the whole child stealing thing, and then the fact that, you know, crystal dragons are very nurturing and they don't appreciate the pillaging that frost giants do.
Yeah.
And then the same goes for white dragons. So the fact that those two can team up against them is pretty bad news for the crystal dragon.
That is bad.
Mm-hmm.
They're solitary, right? Like, unless they have a little family.
Yes. Like all dragons, or most dragons, crystal dragons do tend to be solitary unless they have a family.
Mm.
So although crystal dragons have a tendency to be a little irresponsible with their young, they are by all measures fairly good parents, nurturing and communicative, supportive in their child's endeavors and pursuits of their curiosity.
Damn, you got to watch your kid.
Yeah.
Because some fucking giants are going to come try
Yeah, they're going to try and come enslave you. Yeah.
Man, it's not even dragons are safe from D&D's hatred of children.
It's so true. It's so true. The breath weapon of a crystal dragon is likely the most beautiful of all dragons to behold, though you are just as likely to not want to be hit by it.
Okay.
Older editions describe crystal dragon breath as a cloud of glowing shards forming a cone of light up to 50 to 60 feet.
That's 15 to 18 meters.
In length. The shards strike and harm all those caught in the blast, but the real danger being the dazzling and brilliant white light they emit, which blinds opponents caught within it for up to an hour. The crystal dragon's breath is as bright as daylight and can be observed for miles around.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's really cool. But 5e's changed it, of course. Ah. So 5e's changed this up in an interesting way, I'll say. Instead of actual shards of crystal, the breath seems to be pure radiance from the positive plane itself, doing massive radiant damage and healing the crystal dragon as it absorbs the residual positive energy of its breath into itself.
What?
So it's got a self-healing breath attack.
Self-healing breath. Yeah, it's breathing its own CO2. When you say positive planes, I feel like I have an okay picture of what that means. But okay. What does that mean exactly?
So what I think Fizzbands means
when
they say it is the lower planes and the upper planes kind of exist on this axis and this divider between them. So it's like picture each plane of existence as its own island.
You're going to make some people really mad right now.
Well, yeah, definitely.
They're bubbles.
Yeah, or bubbles, sure. They could be bubbles, islands, whatever. This is a fucking metaphor.
Static spheres, Will.
So, like, if you were to picture each plane of existence as its own island, which is not accurate because they're infinite planes unto themselves, but if you did picture them that way, the ocean between them would be the positive plane.
Okay.
Now, you can't really, as far as I know, you can't really go to this area.
But it's just the energy between.
Exactly. Thank you.
So like within this, if they were floating in the soup, as you are saying, then those planes would be like Mount Celestia and stuff.
Exactly. Celestia and Ysgard and others, Arvander, stuff like that.
Okay.
Where was I?
Sorry.
No, you're good.
I thought that would be pertinent.
Yeah. No, it is. It is. Crystal dragons have a natural inclination towards enchantment, healing, and divination spells as they grow older and wiser. And of course, as proper gem dragons, they have many psionic spell-like abilities as well. Very old crystal dragons gain a unique power called Luck Scale. Once a day, they can enchant one of their own scales as if it was a stone of good luck for 9 to 12 hours according to its age. Stone of good luck is an item that you can get in this game. While this polished agate is on your person, you gain a +1 bonus to ability checks and saving throws.
That's dope.
So crystal dragons can just make these once a day, just plucking a scale off their body.
Oh, I was thinking. That's not what I was thinking.
What were you thinking?
Poop.
Oh, God. When enjoying the company of especially friendly visitors, a very old or older crystal dragon might gift them one of these luck scales.
Can you imagine they're like grooming themselves like a cat and then they have to...
Oh, it seems I've produced a luck scale. Here, you can have it. like, oh, no, thank you.
Like, cats are super chill, and then all of a sudden they just start retching, and they look horrifying. Like, can you imagine a dragon doing that? Yes. Just, like, flying through the air and, like, having to land?
Yes, I can see that.
I need to stop making that really sound like in the mic. Sorry. That's cool, man. Luck? Okay, I have a quick, like, sort of blanket D&D question about luck.
Okay.
Luck seems to be, like, one of the most powerful things in the game. Is that like a reflection of that we're playing a game that involves dice and luck?
Well, I mean, are you talking about like the lucky feet?
There's a lucky feet and like halflings and like luck items and stuff like that being embedded into the culture of like the writing.
I don't know if it has anything to do with the game. I think in a lot of superstitious cultures, I think luck plays a big factor in a lot of the beliefs. And, you know, D&D is full of omens and prophecy and,
it's
baked into the game. I will say this. It's probably considered OP or a very, very good things to invest into because the game itself is based off luck. So, like, if you boost your luck in game, it also boosts your luck out of character, which, you know, makes the rolls go more your way, which seems very powerful.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. I just feel like it. It just is so intentional, and it keeps coming up even
maybe
in the
it
new,
could. Maybe
new
it
writing.
Is. Yeah. I never really gave it much thought, but possibly.
And aren't like in Lord of the Rings, aren't hobbits like naturally lucky, or is it something about Bilbo?
I think that's more something about Bilbo, but I don't know. Maybe Tolkien wrote the hobbits as being lucky because, you know, they're the underdogs and, you know,
a little extra.
Yeah. I don't think there was anything supernatural or anything. It might've just been a narrative device. And then that then translated later when Dungeons and Dragons decided to make a race based off the hobbits from Lord of the Rings. So
yeah, because Gandalf's like, I don't know, he's got those intangibles.
Basically, maybe that's exactly, that's exactly what he said, basically. So fun facts about crystal dragons. They favor a diet of gemstones and metal ores over any other foods, but can actually subsist on the elemental matter of air with no issues. They just breathe and they're good.
There's a $30 buffet on plane of air this afternoon between 4 and
the
7.
The finest air. The bottled at the the crispest, most clear, cold mountaintops.
They have a walk-in freezer just with a bunch of chilled air.
Absolutely. Yes. Absolutely.
In crystal bottles. They of just course. Down the whole fucking thing. They it's just, like the Ferrero Rocher of crystal dragons.
I love it. Yes, absolutely.
I can't have too many of these. I'll get fat.
Trying to watch my figure. Oh, gosh. I forgot that this was coming up.
Yeah, I've been watching that on the teleprompter. So, slowly creep.
We, Fizzman's Treasury of Dragons has been kind enough to give us a named version or a unique named dragon for each gem dragon type.
Fizzman!
And we have come to the Crystal Dragons one. Here we go. This dragon's name is Sarindalaga Dalalaf. Tour. But luckily, this adult crystal dragon is also known as Lady Gem Cloak, and that's what she's going to be called for the rest of this.
Why episode. Have both? Why? I'm sure I'll find out.
One's her dragon name, and the other's like, well, we can't pronounce that because we're humans.
No one can say that.
Yeah, so we're calling you Lady Gem Cloak.
Other dragons can't say that either.
Exactly.
Sarindala Gloth, or is it Fa, like GH?
Or maybe it's Saladal, like Dal.
I'm going to say like Sarin.
Sarindala.
Sarindalalthor.
Sarindalalthor.
Sarindalalthor. Somebody remix that.
Turn it into an auto-tune song. Okay. The adult crystal dragon, also known as Lady Gemcloak, and sometimes the Axe Mother.
What?
Thanks to her association with a dwarf clan dwelling in the northern part of Faerun, she lives closer to civilization than crystal dragons typically do, which delights her because of the close friendship she has formed, but also annoys her as she is forced to deal with hostile fools who mistake her for an evil white dragon, which would be very annoying.
Sure.
Yeah.
I love these little dwarfs.
Like, yeah.
I love you, Axe Mom.
I love you, X-Mom.
I love you too, little dwarf.
Having earned the enmity of the ancient red dragon, Klauth, that's a much easier name to say, Lady Gemcloak is exploring the possibility of establishing close ties between her dwarf allies and a group of Aesirs on the elemental plane of fire. In the meantime, she's trying to protect her dwarf allies from the schemes of a hostile mining cartel.
Say what? Yeah.
If that's cool. Not an adventure hook, I don't know what is.
Yeah. Straight up.
So any questions about crystal dragons before you illuminate the stat block and the layer actions and all that jazz?
What's the genie say? Let's ruminate whilst I illuminate on the fucking...
Have you been watching Aladdin lately?
Nope. No? That's why I can't do the quote right.
Okay. That's my favorite Disney movie. I don't know if you
It's
know
very good. I enjoyed Aladdin quite a bit.
I was obsessed as a child. Let's take a short rest.
Oh, yeah. We do that here. Shout out to Diva Gorgon.
Hey folks, I'm here today to tell you about Visible. Something unfortunate about wireless services, what you see isn't always what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. No perception check required. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. If you're looking for a carrier that is upfront with no hidden fees, then go to Visible.com to make the switch. You don't need more than one line of wireless to save, and you're going to be getting unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Visible is the wireless carrier that's constantly operating from a zone of truth. In their quest for total transparency, Visible wants you to know the monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify is great. They're taking businesses of all sizes, cradling them in their arms, to help them grow by giving them the tools they need. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S., and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success at every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/dungeoncast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/dungeoncast now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/dungeoncast. We've returned.
We have.
I figured out that it's the certain way I sit in my chair that makes it shrink. So oh, nice. I need to not do that. So yeah. It's not totally broken, but please.
It's half broken.
Consider subscribing to our Patreon. Because
help us get Brian a new chair.
Straight up, we use that money for things we need.
Indeed, we do.
That's what we do. I mean, we bought. Where do we start? We recorded the show on our phones.
Oh my god.
In the beginning.
We did that for a long time, dude.
Yes, we did that for a fair amount until we got a Patreon and then money started coming. I was like, dude, we could buy a camera.
Yeah.
Like, we could buy mic
better
stands.
Microphones, mic stands. So, a table.
A big thank you to everyone that subscribes to Patreon, because when we need to do something, and it comes up more often than you'd think.
Pretty much all the time.
Pretty every single month we're doing something. That's how we do it. So thank you.
Indeed.
Thank you so much for making the show what it is. Okay, so that's patreon.com/dungeoncast in case I didn't say that and it's not obvious. But where do we need to be right now? In a lair?
I think so.
In the lair of a crystal dragon?
I think so. Let's talk about it.
Is it big? Let's find out.
They usually are.
Crystal dragons dwell in cold regions where they construct ice and snow structures reminiscent of castles but open to... Okay, let's just get into the lair actions.
We I mean, did that all sounded nice, but yeah.
Yeah, we've read all that. The challenge rating of a legendary crystal dragon increases by one when it's encountered in its lair. I feel like it should be more than that. Lairs are pretty
I think
nasty.
When it comes to challenge ratings, there are more guidelines. You know, it's not a hard number that you just 100% trust.
Like parlay. Mm-hmm. On initiative counts of 20, losing initiative ties, the dragon can take one of the following lair actions. The dragon can't take the same lair action twice in two, or same lair action two rounds in a row. Beguiling whisper, the dragon telepathically whispers to one creature within range of the dragon's telepathy. The creature must succeed on a DC 15 wisdom saving throw or be charmed.
Oh, there it is.
Yes. If a creature's charmed, they can attack the charmer or target the charmer with harmful abilities or magic effects knowingly. The charmer has advantage on any ability check to interact socially with that creature. That's by the dragon until initiative count of 20 on the next round. A creature charmed in this way obeys to the best of its ability any command the dragon issues that isn't directly harmful to the creature.
Yeah, so here's a question.
Yes.
Because, you know, lair actions are very much tied to the initiative count, right?
Uh-huh.
Are lair actions only possibly be taken when combat has been initiated, or does it just make more sense for them to be able to do this out of combat whenever they feel like it?
So that's the gray area I find with players a lot, is like, okay, like the scene is building up. We're approaching the monster.
Yeah.
And it's like, how much time is going by? And I'm like, well, it'll take them about a minute to get up this cliff face to like look down on the nest of the rock or whatever it is that they're doing, right?
Yeah, sure.
So, yes, I would say I would treat it more like how much time is elapsing and like does it make sense to do this thing outside of combat if you're in the lair and you're not officially like I don't have players roll initiative until they do a fight thing.
Until like, okay, you both are aware of each other. You both are attacking each other, or combat is initiated. So, because my first thought with this is like, yeah, if the crystal dragon knows that they're in the lair, the minute they step in the lair, he's gonna start popping by Beguiling Whisper.
Yeah,
say hey, leave.
I think it would be narratively more interesting to follow that than mechanically.
Yeah.
I would think if the dragon is doing something like blatantly harmful with the party's knowledge, then I would call for initiative.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I agree. I just think that they should be able to, like, do this outside of combat. But yeah, it does say that these layer actions occur on an initiative count of 20.
Yeah. I also, with my initiative, the way I run initiative is, like, if... is it narratively interesting for me, the DM, to prompt initiative, or is it more narratively interesting, or was it forced that the players prompted initiative? I always consider those things as well.
Okay.
So we've got ice passage. The dragon can open a passage through a wall of ice or snow that is up to 5 feet thick, creating an opening up to 30 feet wide and high. Nice.
Okay, that's interesting. And since their palace or lair is usually made of ice, there's usually a lot of utility in that.
Yeah, they just bust out their fucking chainsaws. Starlight's Gleam. The dragon chooses a point it can see in the lair. Gleaming starlight radiates from that point to fill a 10-foot radius sphere with dim light. Each creature other than the dragon in that area when the light appears must succeed on a DC 15 dexterity saving throw or take 13 2d12 radiant damage and be outlined in the glow, much like fairy fire. That's cool. Mm-hmm. Attack rolls made against an outlined creature have advantage.
Just like fairy fire.
And the creature can't hide or benefit from being invisible.
Just like fairy fire. It's fairy fire with a little bit of damage on top. I like it.
I'm just going to read these as they're highlighted.
Okay, yeah, but sure.
When you're invisible in Dungeons and Dragons,
it means they can't see you.
Yeah, whoa. An invisible creature is impossible to see without the aid of magic or special sense, like devil sight, which is coming up in 2 episodes.
Also, I think ancient dragons have true sight.
Yeah, they do. For the purpose of hiding, the creature is heavily obscured. The creature's location can be detected by any noise it makes or any tracks it leaves. That's what Pass Without a Trace is for. Attack rolls against the creature have disadvantage, and the creature's attack rolls have advantage.
Nice.
Usually in a lot of scenarios, if you're invisible and you attack, you become visible.
Yeah, usually.
So you get one freebie. The starlight and the glow around any creature fades on initiative count of 20 on the next round.
Oh, so it does fade in a round. I think Fairy Fire's tied to concentration. So.
That's cool. Okay. Regional effects. The region surrounding a legendary crystal dragon's lair is altered by the dragon's magic, creating one or more of the following effects. Clear skies. The skies above a crystal dragon's lair remain clear and free of precipitation unless magically altered. Winds blow lightly, posing little threat to those approaching the lair, and visibility is the best possible for the time of day. That's fucking cool. I feel like a druid could probably use druidcraft to tell the weather and be like, it's going to be clear. Like, it was raining over there, like, pretty close by. That's weird.
Yeah, that would be weird. And also, I was thinking, if a crystal dragon always keeps the area around their lair of clear sky, where does the snow come from?
Ooh.
Or do they, like, oh, okay, the snow's getting a little thin, like, bring in the clouds.
I'm sure that they are, like, time to take a vacation to, like, the other mountain while I let this one snow up. Yeah,
time to go to my summer home.
Yeah, they just fucking stick a big tube in the lake and start, like, blowing snow all over their stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
Crystal dragons, the power tool dragon.
Yeah, so it would seem. We got chainsaws and whatever the hell you just said.
Chainsaws and, like, a snowblower.
Yeah,
well, sure. A snowblower is something else, huh?
Yeah, it is.
I don't know what they call that machine.
Yeah, I don't either, but it exists. I know it exists.
It does exist. They do exist, like the M&M commercial with Santa Claus.
Yes.
Crystal profusion. Plentiful quartz crystals form in natural stone within 6 miles of the lair, particularly in places where natural light can shine on the crystals. Neat. Icy sight. Ice and quartz within 6 miles of the lair become conduits for the dragon's psionic presence. As an action, the dragon can cast the clairvoyance spell, requiring no spell components and targeting any ice or quartz crystals in that region.
Okay, so that's basically they can see and hear you through all the crystals, yeah, right?
Yeah, clairvoyance says, like, go spy on somebody, pretty much.
Which kind of feeds into the thing I was saying about the beguiling whispers. It's like the second they enter the lair, you're going to start hitting with that because you're going to know they're there because you can see through all your crystals throughout your lair.
Yeah, well, this is the region. We're in the region now.
Yeah, not, so, like, that's what I mean. Like,
inside the lair, they can do that.
Yeah, the beguiling whisper part, but what I'm trying to say is, like, the crystal dragon's going to know you're coming before you ever get there.
Yeah.
Because you got to go through the region.
So it's not home.
Unless it's not home. That's true.
You're right. It's hard to sneak up on these guys. Mm-hmm. That's on purpose.
Yeah.
Icy sight, I just did. Positive energy. Any creature that finishes a long rest within 6 miles of the lair regains 2 additional spent hit dice. That's cool. Because on long rest, you only regain half of your spent hit dice, right? Or up to half of your total spent hit dice?
Yes.
Or is it just total hit dice?
No, it's half of your total.
Half of your overall total, not your spent total.
Yeah, of your overall total. Yes.
Cool.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
So according to the rules, you need 2 long rests to replenish from 0 all the way back.
Got it. If you're empty.
If you're empty, yes.
So this would mean that you could pretend, you could just get 2 more.
You get 2 extra.
You can figure out what it means.
Yeah.
Thriving wildlife. Here we go. Here we go. Let's fucking go. Animal populations.
What goes into a horny frenzy when a crystal dragon's around?
Let's find out. Can't wait. Animal populations flourish within 6 miles of the lair. Ability checks made to forage for food by hunting, fishing, or trapping in the area are made with advantage. Everyone's horny.
Animals. Oh, no.
Humanoids are animals.
I will say.
Everyone's horny.
Humans are animals.
If you go to Crystal Dragon Town, you're going to have a baby on your way back. If the dragon dies, the animal population near the lair returns to normal levels over the course of 1d10
like
days.
Like lemmings, they throw themselves off the hill.
Actually
not true. That's a propaganda, but lemmings don't do that.
Lemming propaganda is out of control, Will. Stop perpetuating.
I'm not lying. It was actual propaganda. Well, not propaganda. Anyway, we'll get into that another time.
Wait for that episode. What's that episode called? Fucking
how Disney tricked the world into thinking lemmings commit suicide.
How to write lemmings into your 5e game?
Absolutely.
In a realistic way.
There we go.
Based off of facts.
Lemmings, the best ranger beastmaster companion? Question mark.
Here's 10 things you get wrong about lemmings. If you roll above a 4 on this 1d10, you need to see a doctor.
Oh, gosh. I was going to say, before we got into all the weird horniness of the Crystal Dragon, that a Crystal Dragon patron for like a D&D, an entire campaign, so like a patron of the party, would be really cool because it's like this gorgeous area as your home base. You get extra healing while you're there. And Crystal Dragons just seem cool.
Yeah. sure.
But continue.
If you're having problems with your libido, you're really into it. you guys get the idea. Existing abundance of quartz crystal remains, but the new crystals form at a normal rate. So,
all right, let's talk about the stat block.
Yeah, let's do it. Ancient crystal dragons. This is a gargantuan dragon of gem, which is typically chaotic neutral. You know, there were a lot of good things in there, but they were all very selfishly sort of motivated. So,
sure.
Yeah.
True.
Armor class is 20 natural armor.
Very strong.
HP is 222, a very solid number.
It is. What's the challenge rating on this bad boy?
That's way down here at 19.
Oh, okay, it's a little lower.
20 in its lair.
222 feels low to me. Maybe it's just because in SuperQuest, all the numbers have just gotten crazy out of control.
Check out our actual play campaign, SuperQuest Saga.
Yeah, we've been doing it for 3 years, and we're in the final arc now.
Yeah. This HP is 222 or 12d20. Plus 96. It's got a 40-foot walking speed with a burrowing speed of 40 feet, a climbing speed of 40 feet, and a flying speed of 80 feet.
But it can't swim.
This one don't swim. This dog don't swim. We got strength of plus 7, dex of plus 1. I can never remember. Do I do both numbers?
Whatever you want, man.
I'm going to do whatever I want. Strength is 25 at a plus 7. Dex is 12 with a plus 1. Con is 26 at a plus 8. Intelligence is 20 out of plus 5.
It's a beefy boy.
Yes.
Like, it's a stocky lad.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Wisdom is 16 out of plus 3. Charisma is 21 out of plus 5.
And God, its personality is just so good.
So great. It doesn't need to be either because it could just charm you.
It's true.
I guess to be charming, you need the force of personality to do those kinds of magics. Saving throws is going to be dex plus 7, con plus 14, wisdom plus 9, and charisma plus 11. Charisma. Skills, perception plus 15, stealth plus 13, survival plus 9, very beef. Damage resistance to cold and radiant. That's interesting.
It's always nice when they get 2. Well, I mean, for a dungeon master, not for the players.
Yeah. Get out, cleric. Fuck off.
Yeah, seriously.
Senses is blind sight, 60 feet, dark vision, 120 feet, passive perception of 25. The languages it can speak are common, draconic, and it has telepathy of 120 feet, so it can talk to anybody. Challenge rating is 19, 22,000 experience points.
Here's a question. Is it just me, or should challenge rating be like, I feel like where they put it in the stat block is not ideal.
No, it should be at the top.
It should be at the top, in the top left-hand corner, above or right after the name of the creature.
Yeah, it's kind of saying like, here's all the statistical things. Because of this, we're totaling it at a 19.
Yeah, but the thing is, like, at a quick glance, when I'm trying to find a monster, whether I'm looking for a particular monster or I want to reskin something, Oftentimes, okay, so I rescan a lot, not just because of Super Quest Saga. It's just what I tend to do. Mm-hmm. So oftentimes when I'm looking through a catalog of monsters, the first thing I'm looking for is the challenge rating because I have the general idea of the difficulty I want the fight to be.
Right.
So like there oftentimes in these books, there is a glossary in the back that you can look at, which is nice. It's just, it would be cool if I could quickly look at the stat block and just bam, see it instead of having to be like, fuck, where is it? Where is it? Oh, there it is.
I wish the digital monster manual could sort all the monsters by different categories as well. There's apps that do that.
D&D Beyond needs to hire us.
If you want to, I don't know how to code, so maybe.
No, but ideas, man. We got them.
Just pump the show, okay? You can have it. Just pump the show. People don't know about us. Let's see, where are we at? Oh, proficiency bonus was +6. Yeah, but there are apps that sort by challenge rating.
Yeah, I like there are options. I'm just saying it's poor design.
I would like it to be in-house. Yeah. And maybe there is. And I don't know what I'm talking about, but probably not. I haven't actually been in the digital monster manual in a while. I usually still like to use the paper book for some reason. Hmm. I don't know why. Hmm. I think it's because I have like my player's character sheets up in like 4 different tabs usually. And right. then like my notes are up here, and then it's cool to just have a book with a bunch of tabs.
Yeah,
in
yeah.
It.
You so can use both to. Simultaneously.
Yeah. But okay, so let's continue on. Mm-hmm. We have also this challenge rating thing that you're talking about. I think part of the reason they put it here is because they don't want to put so much emphasis on it. Like, it's here because it's like it's the middle of the stat. It's not important.
Yeah, but it's important enough for me to use. Like, I use it as a tool.
No, you're right.
And like,
right.
I doubt I'm the only one.
I'm saying that they don't think it's important.
Okay, well, they're wrong.
It is. Yeah, they're wrong. legendary resistance 3 times a day. If the dragon fails a saving throw, it can choose to succeed instead.
All dragons get that. We get skip.
It might be somebody's first epi.
Fine.
That's why we read all this.
All right.
You're actions. Right. Multi-attack. The dragon makes 1 bite attack and 2 claw attacks. Slash, slash. Bite. Melee weapon attack is +13 to hit with a reach of 15 feet on one target. It's going to do 18 or 2d10 +7 piercing damage +9, 2d8 radiant damage. So it's dealing radiant damage. It's resisting radiant damage. It's so super cool. Claw is a melee weapon attack with +13 to hit in a reach of 10 feet. One target is going to be a hit on hit for 14 or 2d6 +7 slashing damage.
So, like, theoretically, if all 3 of its attack hits in a single round, it dished out 46 damage. Feels a little low.
Yeah.
For an ancient dragon, you know what I mean? Considering HPs towards the end of this damn game.
I know, you're doing, like, a third of a, like,
yeah,
fighter's
and then, like,
HP.
All 4 a party members get to come out and fucking supernova, you know, with all their ability scores. Or all their abilities, but... Anyways, yeah. I digress. Go ahead.
I mean, there's still legendary actions, so you could theoretically do a bunch of extra claws.
Yeah, yeah. Plus layer actions.
Scintillating Breath is a recharge of 5 to 6. The dragon exhales a burst of brilliant radiance in a 90-foot cone. Each creature in that area must make a DC 22 constitution saving throw, taking 49 or 11d8 radiant damage on a failed save, or half as much damage on a successful one. The dragon then gains 25 temp HP by absorbing a portion of the radiant energy. That's crazy. That it does heal itself.
It does heal itself. And I was thinking, like, now that I think about it, its bite and claws are just what it does between charging its breath.
Pretty much. Yeah. I mean, or if they, like, fuck you in particular. Bah, bah, bah.
That's like, true. Yeah.
There's always that. Spellcasting psionics. The dragon casts one of the following spells requiring no spell components and using intelligence as a spellcasting ability with a spell save DC of 19. Very good. Dancing lights, guidance at will. Dancing lights says make lights. That's probably to glamour its guests. Guidance says you touch one willing creature. Once before the spell ends, the target can roll a d4 and add the number rolled to one ability check of its choice. You can roll the dice before or after.
Yeah, it's probably not going to use that in battle, but it's good for role play purposes.
Yeah.
If the dragon is an ally.
Fucking patronizing ass dragon. Like, think really hard, guys. Think hard about it. Once a day, it can cast Command, Divination,
nice.
Greater Restoration,
that's very nice.
Hypnotic Pattern, ooh. And Invisibility.
Yeah, okay. So some of those are going to be used against a party that's trying to fight it for sure.
Yeah, we won't read all these now. This is a lot. go check them out. They're very cool. I actually don't really know too much about Hypnotic Pattern, so I'll be reading that later. Bonus actions. This thing can change shape. The dragon magically transforms into any creature that is medium or small while retaining its game statistics other than its size. This transformation ends if the dragon is reduced to zero hit points or uses a bonus action to end it. It can also do a psychic step. The dragon magically teleports to an unoccupied space. It can see within 60 feet of it. No wonder they think they're better than you. They are better than you by double
it's in most cases. It's so true.
At least. So legendary actions. The dragon can take three legendary actions, choosing from the options below. Only one legendary action option can be used at a time and only at the end of another creature's turn. The dragon regains spent legendary actions at the start of its turn. You can do a claw. The dragon makes one claw attack. You can do some psionics that costs two actions. The dragon uses psychic step or spell casting, so it could do any of the spells we listed earlier. Starlight Strike costs three actions. This is the Kamehameha of this thing's stat block.
I fucking love it.
The dragon releases a searing beam of starlight at a creature that it can see within 60 feet of it. The target must succeed on a DC 19 dexterity saving throw or take 38 or 11d6 radiant damage. On its at the end of your turn, this thing can blast you in the fucking eyes for 38 damage.
It's true. Yeah. I love it.
That's the whole stat block.
That's excellent. I feel like these dragon stat blocks are so much better than the OG ones from the Monster Manual.
I would love power creep.
Yeah. Well, power creep, and I just think like they realized that they needed a little bit more zest and flavor in these dragons. Like you said, with its little Kamehameha.
That's how they say it in the show. That was really good. Starlight Strike, yeah.
And then of course the innate spells already built in. Not like in the Monster Manual, it gives you like the variant option. But even then, like just having them built in is nice. Having a legendary action that is like very tied into the element. In this case, Radiance is very nice.
Yeah, it is cool.
It's just a better stat block, and it would be really cool if they went back and revisited the Chromatics and Metallics and gave it this treatment.
They really are doing better with their spice cabinet.
Yeah, absolutely. Like if you just built in the spells and gave them, you know, five or six thematic spells, and then a cool, what is that? It costs three charges or whatever for the legendary action.
Yeah,
and give them like, you know, get an Inferno Blast for the red dragon or a lightning storm for the blue, and et cetera, et cetera.
It's very fucking cool.
Yeah.
What does a Starlight Strike look like to you? Because I did picture my dragon getting up on its hind legs and unfurling its wings in like the full span and just like fucking holding that Hadouken style blast. That'd
be super cool.
Or I pictured it like bursting out of its chest too, like Iron Man.
So I've been playing a lot of Elden Ring lately, and there is, spoiler for Elden Ring, mild spoiler for a boss that you have a choice to fight if you find them. There's a lot of dragons in Elden Ring, and there's a particular dragon.
Thanks, dude. I can't play Elden Ring now.
I'm sorry. It's an ancient dragon, right? And it has these lightning abilities, right? And,
sure.
One called Lightning Spear, where this fucking dragon literally holds up both of its arms and summons lightning bolt spears in both hands, and then slams them into the ground, sending electricity everywhere. I kind of picture it like that, but with light.
Oh, cool. Yeah. Neat. That stuff's going to, like, rush out to one person because this is one
time. Yeah.
I love it. Do you have any questions about this thing, Steph?
I don't, except for to say that I'm happy with it and then I'm ready to take a long rest.
I'm also happy with it, and I'm happy that reading about it didn't make me as horny as, like...
As it could have in-game.
let's take a long rest.
All right.
Hey, everybody, welcome to The Long Rest. This is the part of the show where we talk about a bunch of stuff here.
But yeah, a lot. We got like a whole list of stuff we cover here.
We digest the things that we talked about by not talking about them anymore. We're not talking about the thing we were talking about for the rest of the show. It's mostly plugs. Get ready. Because we're plugging you, Patreon supporters. Special thanks to everybody that is on the Patreon right now. I know we've been saying like things are in the works. When we say that, we mean like it's like still like 3 months away, right?
I mean, probably longer in some of those cases. So, I mean, but we could talk a little bit about what we're working on. Did you want to talk about it?
Just wanted to talk about Unhollowed, Will's next DM project.
Yeah, I'm working on. It's going to be a premium Patreon show We're going to pull out all the stops for post-production. We're talking like theme songs, full soundtracks, sound effects, voice acting to like redos by the players themselves.
Like ADR, yeah.
Yeah, and it's going to be a horror, dark fantasy style game, heavily influenced by both Castlevania and Dark Souls. And I believe we're going to have our first session zero in about a month here. And I'm looking to make the entire first season and make it ready to go and then start releasing on Patreon once it's ready. And yeah, it's going to be high quality product for patrons only. And I'm very, very excited.
Yeah, me too. It's going to be a great game. I'm going to be one of the players. We're also going to get Kiki, who some of you know.
Yeah, my sister, and Freeland.
Josh Freeland, friend of the show, Josh Freeland.
And
Tom from Dude, Could Tom You Imagine?
Yeah, exactly. So it's going to be a really fun squad. And the show has been, as far as now, and I don't think it's going to change, it's going to be titled Unhallowed. So, yeah, look forward to that. We're working on it. And when it's ready and sparkling and good to go, you guys will be the first and probably the only people to hear it.
Yeah, so other things we have on Patreon in terms of this particular show, you can check out episode notes. Early episodes, as early as we can get them to you, which is typically anywhere from 1 to 3 weeks, ad free, baby.
Mm-hmm.
Don't listen to that fucking ad. Listen to just to us.
Indeed.
Other than where we plug our own shit.
That's true.
But yeah, you guys can check that out at patreon.com/dungeoncast. There's tons of hours and hours of bonus content for live plays, some old record, middle pandemic. It's called the Dungeon Chats.
Oh, yeah.
We were trying that out for a while. It was fun.
So that's a show on there, and there's a lot of live plays. The Vault Raider series, which is like three very large one-shot adventures.
Mm-hmm.
Halloween Adventure that we once did, Ranger Danger, and
there will be a third Ranger Danger as soon as I can fucking make it happen, but there is one.
And then Flashbang and the Surgeon, two seasons?
There's three seasons. Flashbang and the Surgeon. They're all, I think they're 10 to 12 episodes for each season.
Nice.
Depending on which villains got part twos. For people that don't know what F-Bats is, it's Flashbang and the Surgeon is the title of the show. We call it F-Bats. It's Batman the Animated Series episodes turned into D&D campaigns with these two characters, Flashbang and the Surgeon, who work for old Batman, kind of like Batman Beyond. And they go fight I try to keep the episode structure as intact as possible to stay true to the show. So it usually pans out pretty good. You know, obviously character choices are going to manipulate some things. And the cast is really funny. It's myself, your special guest, Jake, and our good friend, Steve. So yeah, you guys should definitely go check that out. I think you can get all that stuff at $10 a month. It'll get you everything that we just talked about. If you want to go up from there, it's $20 a month to get some special merch.
Yeah.
I think we have merch at 10 as well, like stickers or something.
Yeah, and I know at $5 a month, you get a lot of what we talked about. Not all of it, but at least half of it.
Right. So, yeah, check that out. I want to shout out the people that have come in.
Yeah, let's shout out the people who have been so kind to us.
The Last Mile.
Oh, my gosh, The Last Mile.
No, they're not on here. I just want to shout them out.
Okay, I was like, no way.
Yeah, no way. Don't worry about it. Like, I just want to keep shouting them out.
Yeah.
This is awesome. I think I might want to do that. If you subscribe to us in the whale tiers, like the bigger tiers, I think we're just going to shout you out each time.
Yeah, that sounds great to me. Yeah,
because you deserve it. Thank you so much for floating this and buying me chairs. here we go. Aaron Hicking.
Thank you, Aaron.
Thank you, Aaron. Tarchak, period.
Thank you. Tarchak.
Tarchak, thank you.
Tarchak, thank you.
Bailey Erickson.
Thank you, Bailey.
Thank you, Bailey Erickson.
Thank you, Bailey.
I like the way your first name is spelled. It's B-A-E.
Ooh, Bay.
And I'll Lee. Keep you like before Bay, anybody Lee. Else. Lee Erickson. Jared Pasek.
Thank you, Jared.
Jared, thank you.
Thank you, Jared.
Raekwon Brown.
Raekwon, thank you.
Thank you, Raekwon. We got Connor Adams coming out to shoot.
Thank you, Connor.
Connor.
Thank you.
And Ben LeMay.
Thank you, Ben.
Thank you, Ben LeMay.
Thank you, Ben.
Thank you. All right, everybody. That was the Patreon shout-outs. Once again, we really appreciate it. If you want to support us in other ways, you totally can, like leaving an iTunes or Spotify review or some review of any kind, like hitting that subscribe button. Smash that shit. Hit the like.
Destroy it. Make it unusable.
Oh, no. Blood Eagle that shit.
No, no, not the Blood Eagle.
Spread
God
the
damn
word,
it.
Baby. Oh, God. Spread the word like an ancient Viking spreading a man.
I can't. But yeah, please
about
do.
About those dungeon
definitely,
guests.
Definitely, please do.
Yeah. What else did we say? I forgot to bring up the little list, but
we got a merch store with all kinds of cool stuff. I'll be ordering more myself, so you guys will be able to see some of it in action on the show soon enough. I was wearing one of the baseball tees, Dungeon Cast baseball tee, and also Dungeon Cast baseball cap. I'm also a baseball fan, so yeah.
Yes, and I'm a hockey fan, and the LA Kings have made the Stanley Cup playoffs for the first time in a few years, so
ooh,
I'm going to be wearing
very nice
King shit. For now.
For the interim.
And fuck that hater on YouTube that, not actually, because I think they're probably a pretty cool person, but also fuck you for saying that the Kings were a bad hockey team at the beginning of the season. And fuck me for agreeing with you. Bad teams don't make the playoffs. Yes, they do.
But if you want, not in baseball, they don't, usually. What was I saying? Oh, yeah. If you want merch, though, if you want Dungeon Guest merch, go check out our store, spreadshop.com.
Yeah.
It's in the description.
Spreadshirt.com.
Oh, yeah.
Slash
it's our spread shop on Spreadshirt.
Yes. Yeah, Spreadshirt.com/thedungeoncast. And you can also check out our Twitter, where there are tweets.
Lots of them. Posts, daily, in fact.
Posts on Instagram, where you can see pictures of us, usually YouTube style thumbnails.
Yeah, that's true.
And then also, we have a
Discord, yeah,
and a TikTok, where we don't really do much.
On the TikTok, but a Discord, there's a lot.
So fucking busy that I can't. So anyway, yeah, we got all that stuff. Check it out. There's a great community on Discord where you can talk all things D&D like we do on this show.
The community is in the thousands at this point.
Yes. Yeah. You could talk about all things D&D at your pace, at your leisure, and the topics you want to talk about, not the topics we're talking about. But you can also talk about those things too. You could talk about Super Quest Saga there if you're fans of that show, which you should be. Mm-hmm. The finale is coming up. It's going to be awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's all we got. Let's call it a game.
Let's call it a game.
The Dungeon Cast. Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it, or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz and how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.